Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How do the brains of people with autism differ from the brains of people without it? The question grows ever more relevant as about 1 in 88 American children are now diagnosed on the autism spectrum. And while they don't expect to find a single cause for the multiple symptoms of autism, scientists are gleaning new information from state-of-the-art brain scan technology that might lead to therapies to help people with autism function more easily in a neurotypical world. These developments are of particular interest to Temple Grandin. She is professor of animal science at Colorado State University, a past board member of the Autism Society of America, and a highly sought-after lecturer on her own experiences with the condition. Her newest book, written with Richard Panik, is called The Autistic Brain, Thinking Across the Spectrum, and she'll be in Dallas tomorrow night to speak at the DMA's Arts and Letters Live event at the First Presbyterian Church of Dallas. Temple, welcome to Think.
It's great to be here.
You were born just a few years after autism came into existence as a diagnosis and before the now discredited theory that it was caused by bad parenting in some way. How did your mother approach your education and care?
Well, fortunately, she was about a decade before all the blaming of the parents stuff started. When I was 2.5 years old, I had absolutely no language. And I was sitting and rocking, and the mother took me into a neurologist in Boston, Bronson Crothers. And, of course, back then, the neurologists hadn't communicated with the psychiatrists, so they didn't know what autism was. And they said I might have had some kind of brain damage, and I was referred to a little speech therapy school that two teachers taught out of their basement. And they did the same kind of therapies that are done today. I can't emphasize enough the importance of early intervention. Mother also hired a nanny who just spent all day playing turn-taking games with me and my sister. You've got to teach these kids how to take turns.
Yeah, so her focus and the focus of all your teachers at that point was on individual behaviors caused by your autism rather than trying to sort of cure the way your brain works.
Well, they just didn't know.
Yeah.
And since my first doctor was a neurologist, and the Kanner paper had only come out like 4 years prior to that, my first doctor didn't even know what autism was. She just knew that this speech therapist that worked out of their home did a good job with a lot of kids with speech problems. And I was in a little class with six kids, and she'd pull each one for individual kind of ABA type of therapy. And there was a Down syndrome kid and some other kids in the little nursery school that did not talk.
You use the analogy sometimes of an office building to explain how brains work. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, brains have departments. In fact, I've changed that model a bit. I like to use a model of kind of a circular office building. We're all around the perimeter of this big office building, sort of like the thing that Steve Jobs is trying to build in California. And you've got all the offices around the perimeter, and that's the gray matter. And different offices have different functions, like language, motor, visual thinking, the frontal cortex, executive function. But then you have to have circuits that interconnect the office, all the individual specialized offices that are around on the perimeter, and that's the white matter circuits. And those are the circuits that are in my book, The Autistic Brain, and those comprise about half of the brain, big cable bundles that interconnect the different specialized parts of the brain. And this is where the abnormalities for autism and many other disorders probably lie in these cable bundles not growing the way they should be growing. Because half the brain is inter-office communication cables. I mean, think phones, internets, and all kinds of other communications.
So in an autistic brain, as compared with a neurotypical brain, some of those offices may be sort of over-connected to one another, and others are scarcely in contact.
That's correct. And the offices involved with things like facial recognition, those are under-connected. Things like recognizing facial expression, you know, the social circuits, and this has been documented like 15 years ago with functional MRI, those circuits just aren't working right. So people on the autism spectrum tend to not be socially related. But on the high end of the spectrum, they may have skills in art. I mean, half the people in Silicon Valley, and you've got some tech industry in Texas, you know, are probably a little bit on the autism spectrum. You take out some social circuits, then you get geek circuits to do all the fun stuff. But then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got very severe autism, where the person remains nonverbal. They may have epilepsy in addition to the autism. You see, it's a very, very broad spectrum. And as the different components of the spectrum are dissected out, you're going to find that, you know, that it's a very heterogeneous, variable disorder. But the one thing that seems to be common is the lack of social relatedness. That's the core common symptom.
What did you learn the first time you had a brain scan about your own, about the structure of your own brain?
Well, the very, very first brain scan I had was in Eric Corshane's lab in San Diego, and they found out my cerebellar vermis was a little different. That wasn't really all that interesting. But then the second one I had, they found out my cerebellum was 20% smaller than normal, and that would explain why my balance is not the best and why I was never able to learn how to ski with my skis really close together and make those perfect turns, even though I had a lot of lessons and I really, really tried really hard. And then the later brain scans that were done, they got a lot more interesting.
What's so interesting is that you, like a lot of people with autism, have sort of uneven cognitive skills. For example,
that's typical.
It's typical. You can talk about that.
That is typical. We have a whole chapter in the autistic brain on that. The tendency to be really, on the higher end of the spectrum, the tendency is to have an area of strength and an area of deficit. I am a photorealistic visual thinker who thinks in pictures. In fact, in USA Today, there's a color photograph of a gigantic visual circuit that's outbranching from my language, speak what you see circuit, that may explain some of my visual skills. I mean, I can test run equipment in my mind. Hmm. Algebra is absolutely impossible. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. Then another kind of mind is a mathematics mind, more of a pattern thinker, the kind of mind that, you know, sort of think visual, spatial, you know, where are you located? These kids often have trouble with reading. And in the autistic brain, we've got all the research data that shows these two types of visual spatial thinking really do exist. And I want to emphasize this is not limited just to people with autism. You know, think artists, think mathematicians. There are two types of visual spatial thinking, object-realistic visual thinking and the more pattern where you're located in space. And then a third type of mind on the autism spectrum is the word thinker. This is a kid that knows every fact about his favorite movie star, or he knows every kind of race car and the driver, whatever the thing is that he's interested in, and they tend to think in words, and they are not usually mathematicians or visual thinkers.
What differences in the autistic brain account for the fact that people with autism tend to be more interested in looking at objects than at human faces?
Well, the reason is the social circuits aren't hooked up, mm-hmm. But we need people that are interested in things, because you wouldn't have a radio station right now if it wasn't for the more of the Asperger or mild autism type of brain. I mean, think about it. Who do you think made the first stone spear? Yeah. It would not be the yak-yaks around the campfire.
Right. Well, I mean, do you, there are obviously things about being on the spectrum that make life more difficult in certain aspects, but do you sort of bristle against the idea that we need to cure all autism?
Well, I don't really want to be cured. I like my logical
way,
I think.
Yeah.
See, in the mild end of the spectrum, autism is just a personality variant.
Mm-hmm.
When does geeks and nerds become mild autism? In fact, in the latest edition of the diagnostic guidelines, they're going to take out Asperger's, which is basically autism with no speech delay, and call it social communication disorder, and then they don't have to provide services for it. See, the problem you have with these diagnostic categories, they are not precise. They're not precise like diagnosing for tuberculosis,
right,
where it's very, very precise. Basically, the diagnostic categories are based half on science and the other half on doctors squabbling around conference room tables. It's not precise, and parents get totally locked into those labels. But then you get on the other end of the spectrum, you've got a much more handicapped child. They're not going to be doing a high-level job. And they may going to remain nonverbal. They may have epilepsy. You see, you almost have like two different groups. When the kids are little, like 2 and 3 years old, they all look the same. You do the early intervention, and then they kind of divide into the high group and then much more severe group. And I find teachers have a hard time shifting gears between the two different groups. They're going to find is that autism sort of taken apart, that it's very variable. And also, we need to be looking at the sensory issues that range from being a nuisance to being very, very debilitating. Like, a person can't stand fluorescent lights because they flicker. But that's not everybody with autism. That's a subgroup. Problems with sound sensitivity, touch sensitivity. These things are very variable, these sensory problems.
My guest is Temple Grandin. She's professor of animal science at Colorado State University and author of the new book, The Autistic Brain, Thinking Across the Spectrum. She'll be in town in Dallas tomorrow night to speak to the Dallas Museum of Art's Arts and Letters Live series. That event will take place at the First Presbyterian Church of Dallas. We'll come back to our conversation with Dr. Grandin in a couple of minutes. And if you would like to be part of it, we do have lines open at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Before you do that, though, we would ask that you double check that your membership to KERA is current. You can do that by going online to kera.org or establish a membership for the very first time. You can also call in and sign up that way at 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington is back with us now. Jeff Whittington, if you were up early with KERA, you have already heard Jeff this morning. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. Thanks so much Well, thank you very much. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. And thanks to everyone who's contributed during the membership campaign so far. However, we want to wrap this drive up today or tomorrow. And we have this fantastic challenge from the Harold Simmons Foundation. They have said, we'll give KERA an additional $25,000 if the drive ends tomorrow, Friday. Well, hey, folks, it's Thursday. It's noon on Thursday already. So that means we really just have, if you do the math, to try to end the drive by tomorrow at 7 p.m., that's 29 hours from now. 29 hours from the end of the show. So we'll say 30 hours or so. We've really got to hear from you because we still need 1,501 contributions. 1,501 contributions to end this drive by tomorrow. That will unlock the challenge from the Harold Simmons Foundation and bring an additional $25,000 to KERA.
Your contribution goes just as far as we can possibly take it to provide you with the kind of programming that you expect. We are so proud on Think to be able to bring you guests of world renown like Temple Grandin to discuss things that we know are important to you, to your family, to this community. All of this is possible because of listener support. The majority of our funding comes from regular people like you and me who love public radio, who love KERA in particular, and who feel like it's worth a contribution. If you don't take a thank you gift, your contribution is 100% tax deductible, and yet you reap the benefits of a year or perhaps, you know, a decade of great radio.
Yeah, it's a fantastic resource for you, as you know, because, you know, you listen. It's so funny to listen to ourselves try to convince you to make a contribution. You know, used to say things like, if you're listening right now, well, of course you're listening right now. If you appreciate the service, if you appreciate KERA, well, of course you appreciate it. You're listening. You spend time. I think time is probably one of your most valuable resources, and you're spending it. You're spending great gobs of it listening to KERA. Well, do your part right now. Spend a little bit of money, just a little bit of money, to help us achieve what is really shaping up to be a very doable goal in the last day and a half, 2 days or so of this membership campaign. 1,495 contributions left to go to make the goal, to end the drive successfully. And hey, if you want to get your very own copy of Temple Grandin's book, The Autistic Brain, we've got that available today when you join the station with a $120 membership contribution. That's just $10 a month. Very affordable for many of us. $10 a month when you become a sustaining member of the station.
This book is full of great explanations of the very latest thinking about autism and what puts people on the autism spectrum and the differences between an autistic brain and a neurotypical brain. I found it fascinating. I don't have any direct experience with the condition, but I just thought it was a great helped me really understand a lot of the experiences of people with autism. I think families who have a loved one with the condition will also find this very up-to-the-minute research interesting and informative, also great resource for teachers, and an interesting read because Temple Grandin, let's face it, is a fascinating human being and someone a lot of people think of as a hero in this country. If you would like to make your contribution now and receive a copy of The Autistic Brain, it's available as a thank you gift at the $10 a month level or above at kera.org or 1-888-694-6931.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering summer courses for adults in literature and languages, cultural history, and arts and design at the Dallas, Plano, and Taos, New Mexico campuses. Registration at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Temple Grandin. She's professor of animal science at Colorado State University and author of the new book, The Autistic Brain, Thinking Across the Spectrum. She'll be in Dallas tomorrow night at the First Presbyterian Church of Dallas to speak to Arts and Letters Live. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. I want to go back for a minute, Temple, to this question of sensory disorders. And you mentioned these are not necessarily considered a high priority in many circles, but they can make life very uncomfortable. You, for example, are very sensitive to loud sound.
Well, and that's gotten somewhat better with age. I also have problems with scratchy clothing. I find some cotton itches, other cotton doesn't itch. But the problem you have with these sensory problems is they're so variable.
Mm-hmm.
And they vary from being a nuisance to making it just impossible for the person to tolerate normal environments like football games, noisy restaurants with a lot of TVs, or a normal office. And for me, they're one of the top priority areas for research because you have a lot of nonverbal individuals with autism that can't tolerate a busy Walmart. They just go into sensory overload. They feel like they're inside the speaker at the rock concert. And I would make these sensory problems a top priority. But you can't just study them with the autism label. You need to study, okay, this person has a visual problem, or this person has a sound sensitivity problem, or a touch sensitivity problem. You can't just use the umbrella term of autism to study these things because different people on the autism spectrum have different varying amounts of sensory problems.
Yeah, I thought your book did such a good job reminding everyone that individuals with autism are individuals, and the condition will sort of manifest itself in different ways. And it is worth looking at individual symptoms rather than just saying, well, that's par for the course for people who have autism.
Well, I've seen that bad. I've seen a child that's had gastrointestinal problems, and the doctor says, well, he has autism. Well, maybe he also has acid reflux,
right,
causing a lot of bad behavior.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Gary in Shady Shores. Hi, Gary.
Hello. Yes, my question is regarding the label of autism. I have a son that's has autism, and I would like to ask Temple what she feels about all these wide range of the whole spectrum being labeled autistic, because I feel like it gives society not a realistic view of what possibly the capabilities of an autistic person are. And also, I understand from the school district's standpoint, so they can get services in the school district, but to see Temple, she's got a PhD, very successful, but there's a large group of population of people that are autistic that are not high-functioning.
Well, that's absolutely correct. That's absolutely correct.
That seems to me to be a disservice to the autistic community. You know, it seems like there should be further, maybe a different label.
What do you think, Temple?
Well, I think that, if you have a child that remains nonverbal after you have early intervention, that's going to require a very different kind of service than a fully verbal child that's just kind of socially awkward. You see, this is the problem. The label covers such a wide range of individuals.
We have an email here from Patricia who says, my son is 6 and very high functioning. He does have some social challenges, but doesn't always understand how to behave, although he has friends. His academics are fine and maybe advanced. She asks, when do you talk to a child about how their brain is different and what might be the best way?
Well, there's actually some really good children's books that one of the ones for really young children really like is a book called Little Rain Man. That's especially a good book if you think a child might be a visual thinker. The thing that I get worried about is I'm seeing too many kids, especially on the high end of the spectrum, getting totally fixated on their autism. When I was 6 years old, I was more fixated on my art projects and making things. And my ability in art was always encouraged. You know, and oftentimes an autistic kid will want to do the same anime character over and over again. You want to take that thing they're fixated on and broaden it out. If he likes trains, let's read about trains. Let's read about the history of the railroads. Let's do mathematics with trains. Broaden out that interest, but tap into that kind of motivation of that fixation.
Well, here's a related question from Sherry who says, I know that your mom set high standards for you. We have parents who worry about too much pressure and want to shelter their children from failure. What advice do you believe we should offer these parents?
Mother had a very good instinct on how much to stretch me. I want to warn, no sudden surprises. You can't just say, okay, today we're going to new school. You cannot do that.
Sure.
You can't throw the kid in the deep end. But on the other hand, you've got to stretch them. And you got to stretch them just a little bit outside their comfort zone. Because when I was a young child, 7 or 8 years old, I was serving hors d'oeuvres at my mother's cocktail parties, which taught important social rules, lots of turn-taking games. She was always getting me involved in new activities. When I was 13 years old, she got me a little sewing job that I did with a freelance seamstress, and I hemmed dresses and took garments apart. When I was 15, I was cleaning stalls in the horse barn. I think we coddle kids way too much on not learning work skills, and this needs to start at age 12. And a really good thing that 12-year-olds could do is just set it up with some neighbors for your child to walk their dogs. Now, obviously, somebody on a very severe end of the spectrum is not going to be able to do this, but you've got a fully verbal 12-year-old. He's perfectly capable of walking those dogs every day, and there's a discipline of work. Those dogs have to be walked every day, even if it's raining. Kids need to learn that discipline of work.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have Andrew on the line now in Plano. Hello, Andrew.
Hi, Temple Grandin. It is a true honor to speak with you. My son Ryan is 9 years old. He just turned 9. He has been labeled high-functioning autistic. I am wondering what type of activities, you know, what direction should we push him through as far as thinking about a future career? Let me give you a little insight.
I need problems to find out what kind of thinker this child is. By 9 years old, if he's a visual thinker, he's probably very good at art. If he's a mathematical thinker, that should have shown up in the classroom. A writer thinker, you know, what kind of a thinker do you think your son is? What's he good at?
He absolutely loves building things, and he is completely fascinated with this computer game called Minecraft.
Okay, now I want to limit the computer game playing. I'm seeing too many kids becoming addicts. Okay, an hour a day is just fine at that. The other thing, let's get kids involved where they can get friends who shared interests. I really like activities like, you know, doing Lego Mindstorm robots, where maybe three kids have to get together in a team and figure out how to make the robot work. You know, get involved with shared interests you can do with other children. I think that's really important.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. I want to ask you about this, Temple. You write about some interesting new research into the therapeutic benefits of singing. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, singing circuits are on a separate brain circuit than the language circuit. So there's some children, again, you see, this is where you have all these different subgroups, but there is a small subgroup that can sometimes be taught to speak by singing the words rather than speaking them. Now, that does not go across the whole autism spectrum, but for some kids, that works. And it's a simple thing you can try. Other things you can try that sometimes help stimulate speech are things like slow swinging. That sometimes helps some kids. I've heard parents tell me their child did their first words while riding a horse, you know, rhythm and balancing. The problem you've got with autism is it's very, very, very variable. And something that might work with one child may not work with another child.
Another thing that you point out in the book is the idea that for some people with autism, it seems like the world is going by too fast. So those who have trouble interpreting the emotion and intent in a human facial expression, if that's slowed down or if speech is slowed down, things take on a lot more meaning for them.
Well, that's absolutely true. And when I was a young child and when the grown-ups got to talking very, very fast, it went into gibberish. But when people spoke a little more slowly, then I understood. I have problems hearing the hard consonant sounds. So my speech teacher, when I was very, very young, when I was like 2.5 years old, she'd hold up a cup and she'd say cup. But then she'd also go cup and enunciate the hard consonants. And then she'd say cup. She'd alternate back and forth between saying cup the regular way and going cup. So I could hear those hard consonant sounds.
1-800-933-5372, our number. Harvey in Rockwall is on the line now. Hi, Harvey.
Hi, Chris. Hello, Grandin.
Hi.
You're a lifesaver. Whatever, I've tried to explain to somebody why something I've invented works, and they ask me if I've tested it. I always ask them, have you seen that movie, Temple Grandin, on HBO? There's a scene in there where she explains to him that she knows it's going to work because she's already ran it through her mind 12 times. I experienced that. And the reason that I think that you're so wonderful is prior to being exposed to you, I thought I was a problem. And now I realize that I'm really at a solution.
Well, there's certain things you're going to be really good at doing, and you need to find a career where you can use that skill.
I'm almost as old as you are, so, yeah, we've got all kinds of careers.
Good.
But it's just so wonderful that you're out there and people can see that and then recognize it in a friend of theirs and maybe say, well, maybe because they're socially inept, that's okay because they're bringing something else to the conversation.
Well, that's right.
When did you start to feel a responsibility, Temple, to not only do the work that you had focused on professionally, but also to advocate for people with autism?
Well, I'm seeing too many kids, especially on the high end of the spectrum, going absolutely nowhere. Makes me crazy because I work in the meat industry, I work in the cattle industry, and I'll go to a cattleman's meeting, and there's a rancher raising beautiful cattle, and I know he's on the spectrum. Or I'll go in a meat plant, and there's the guy that's the head of the maintenance department. You know, he's my age. I know he was on the spectrum, undiagnosed, and he's had a good job all his life. And then I see Junior with no job skills, addicted to video games, and this just makes me really crazy. And I want to see that young kid go out and make something out of himself.
Temple Grandin is with us this hour. She is professor of animal science at Colorado State University, and she has a new book out called The Autistic Brain, Thinking Across the Spectrum. She'll be in town tomorrow night at First Presbyterian Church of Dallas to address the DMA's Arts and Letters Live series. If you'd like to be part of our conversation, you can call in now to 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. We'll talk more with Temple Grandin in a few minutes. Right now, though, we want to ask you, please, if this is the kind of programming that you value, so many of you are responding via email. We have people waiting online to talk to Dr. Grandin. This is the kind of programming that is worth supporting with your dollars. A gift of just $5 or $10 or $20 a month goes a long way toward allowing us to bring you all the great shows you hear on KERA, and in particular goes to help support a locally produced show like Think and like Anything You Ever Wanted to Know on Fridays. The executive producer of this show and of that show has just stepped in, Jeff Whittington. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. What a treat. First of all, it's like one of those days when, you know, you get to have Temple Grandin on the show.
I know.
It's
great.
It's really a remarkable day, and we're so thrilled. We're so fortunate to have her here today, even in the midst of the waning hours, let's say, hopefully the waning hours of our membership campaign. It is the spring membership campaign. This is your opportunity to support a show. And we know you're listening because you're calling in, you're asking questions, you're tuned in. And so thank you so much. And thanks so much to Dr. Grandin for being with us and being patient during these membership breaks. I want to thank Troy Wing in Plano also, and Karen Swenson in Dallas, Debbie Doyle in Plano, and Maria and Alex Carvalho in Dallas. They have called 888-694-6931, or they've gone online to kera.org and made a contribution in support of this interview and this program and this radio station.
Thank you so much, Roy Knesnick in Arlington, and Aaron Don and Nandini Bose in Allen. Thank you also, Regine and Warren Booth in Little Elm. Really appreciate your contributions. 1-888-694-6931 is the number to join those good folks, or you can make your contribution online at kera.org. Among the thank you gifts we have on offer today are copies of Dr. Grandin's new book, The Autistic Brain, Thinking Across the Spectrum. Fascinating, fascinating piece of work. Details some of the cutting-edge research, and also helps take neurotypical people inside the minds of someone who might have autism, and depending on how that sort of presents itself. Really interesting piece of work. We would highly recommend reading it. It's available as a thank you gift, but of course you don't have to take a thank you gift. You can obtain the book however you like.
Sure.
But we do ask that you make a contribution as well to KERA at 888-694-6931 or kera.org.
Yeah, the book's out, and I'm sure that you might even be able to pick up a copy at our colleagues over at Arts and Letters Live's event tomorrow evening if you're going to that event to see Dr. Grandin speak. But we're thrilled to be able to offer you the chance to get a copy as a thank you gift when you support the station that's bringing you this interview. This interview is made possible by everyone who's contributed over the last week, over the last year, over the last 35 years that KERA has been here. It takes everybody working together to make this place of civility, this this place of tranquil and intellectual and respectful conversation, you know, to make it survive, to make it last. And we only have this kind of, my friend Joe Nick Potosky calls it the digital campfire. We only have it because of the people who think highly enough of it to give. And we're asking you today, I'm asking you right now, to think highly enough and to take a moment, just take a couple of moments, and call 888-694-6931. 888-694-6931 is the number to call, or contribute at kera.org. Especially today, there is a challenge grant underway right now from the Harold Simmons Foundation. They called up. They said, hey, KERA, we'll give you $25,000, but you got to finish this drive by Friday.
888-694-6931 or kera.org. You know, there are two ways of thinking about these drives, Jeff. I think there are people who say, well, they're just begging for money. We're not begging for money. We're essentially just letting you know how much the service has cost and bringing you the bill. Like if you order a pizza and it's delivered to your house, you can't just grab the pizza and slam the door. I guess you could do it once and then the pizza guy doesn't come the next time. You've been
sort of eating. Probably call the police, actually.
You've been eating the pizza for a while now. We know you love it. And KERA, we just keep coming to your
eating
door.
Pizza.
And we would ask that you just, you know, consider how delicious that pizza was, how much this programming is worth to you. And when we come to you with the bill, just chip in a bit. 888-694-6931 or kera.org.
Have you ever been to dinner with a group of people where everybody's share is like $50 and one guy says, I'm giving 20?
It's awful.
Yeah. I mean, we've all been there, right?
Right.
We've all been there.
You just can't believe it. And then you say, oh, well, we'll just deal with it.
Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy.
I just had breadsticks.
You know what? And 7 glasses of wine.
Right.
Here's my $20. So here's the deal. I don't think we're begging. I feel like I'm encouraging you.
Yeah.
I'm encouraging you. Yes, we're encouraging for money. That's what we're doing here. We're encouraging for money today in support of this fantastic conversation with Dr. Temple Grandin, which will continue in just a couple of minutes. But there's still time for you to call.
Your money serves you. The money you give to the station comes right back to you in the form of great, informative, well-researched, responsible, civil programming. That's worth something. KERA.org is the way to go online, or you can make your contribution at 1-888-694-6931. Back in 2 minutes with Temple Grandin.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering summer courses for adults in literature and languages, cultural history, and arts and design at the Dallas, Plano, and Taos, New Mexico campuses. Registration at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Temple Grandin. She's professor of animal science at Colorado State University and author of the new book, The Autistic Brain, Thinking Across the Spectrum. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372, or you can join the conversation via email to think@kera.org. Let's go now to Fort Worth and speak with Trish. Hello, Trish.
Hi there. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
Hi, Temple. I am so excited to be talking to you. You're my hero, really.
Oh, thank you.
I can't wait to get your book. I have a son in kindergarten who is very high on the spectrum. He's mainstreamed and doing pretty well. And I guess I just want to be as proactive as I can to figure out ways to help the quirky level child maximize the skills that he's got and deal with the social challenges, because I do see, it seems like he's very advanced academically, but socially he's like a half a year behind everyone else. And do you have any thoughts on how to, I guess?
When I was in kindergarten, we played a lot of board games. And when I was a little kid, they didn't have any children's games, so we played Parcheesi. And you had to learn how to take turns, wait to take your turn, and shake those dice with a fair shake. You know, you can't slide in a pair of sixes and then slide them out. That's not okay. You've got to shake them up. Board games are just really great. You know, get him in, you know, set up situations where he does games with other children. You see, in the 50s, the things that were fun, you had to do with somebody else, the games. So I do a lot of, you know, those sorts of things with him because he's got to learn how to wait and take his turn.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Jennifer is on the line now in Dallas. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead.
Thank you. Temple, my question is that I'm a counselor educator at University of North Texas at Dallas, and we are wondering, in training our teachers and our counselors, is it better to focus on helping students improve their deficits, say, in math or reading, or should we spend more percentage of time just focusing on their strengths?
Well, I think we need to spend quite a lot of time on focusing on strengths. Now, that doesn't mean we totally neglect deficits. But, you know, they pounded away on me with algebra, and that was just useless. Some kids that can't do algebra can do geometry. You know, I think we got to get more emphasis on building up strengths, because in the work that I've done on cattle equipment design, that's a whole field called industrial design that uses my kind of visual thinking skill, you know, things like graphic design. You know, the kid gets a little bit older, we got to start thinking about what could he be. If the child's good at math, well, that's going to be a child that can go in a STEM program, engineering, science, math, computer programming, those sorts of things. And then you have another kind of person on the spectrum, they're a word thinker. And the kinds of jobs they might be good at is journalist, keeping records, accounting, and specialized retail, because they'd know all the products. But the people on the spectrum that are successful end up in a career where they use their area of strength. And basically, the career that I've done with livestock, the formal name for it's industrial design.
What did it take, Temple, for you to learn not to be frustrated with people that you're working with who don't share your level of visual acuity, so that something you would describe to them or show to them wouldn't be obvious the way it is to you right away?
Well, when I was young, I got real undiplomatic because I didn't know that my thinking was different. Now that I know that my thinking is different, you know, the different kinds of minds need to work together. And, you know, like I need the mathematician mind to do engineering stuff on the things that I design. You know, the Fukushima nuclear power plant needs a person like me because as a visual thinker, I'm not going to put the generators that run the emergency backup pumps in the basement where they're going to get wet and get wrecked, and then they're not going to run the emergency equipment. But on the other hand, I can't design a nuclear reactor. You know, now that I understand how thinking is different, I realize I've got to explain things much better. But when I was younger, when I was in my 30s, I thought everybody thought in pictures the way I did. I didn't know that it was different.
1-800-933-5372, our number. Next on the line is Aaron in Mansfield. Hello, Aaron.
Hi. Big fan of both you guys.
Thank you.
Temple, Chris, you guys are awesome. You know, when I moved to North Texas 13 years ago and discovered National Public Radio, I have not changed my channel. I wish all my channels were set there. I've learned a lot. You guys are great. With Temple, I'm personally a livestock person. You know, I've worked at a livestock auction. And I'm a gymnastics coach, have been for 32 years, and of all things, I'm a horseshoer, have been for 40 years, I'm 52 years old. And, you know, before that happened, as a kid, I always felt that I was, you know, dumb or stupid or why people couldn't understand me. And the moment I got into livestock, purely by happenstance, everything came together, and my athletics got incredibly better. At first, my learning takes a little while to get going, but once I get going, but, you know, and I get labeled as an ADD person. And I speak languages, you know, Spanish and English fluently. And as an ADD person, or as I'm labeled, I tend to think, is it possible that autism and ADD are just overlapping in misconception or stereotype?
Oh, yeah, they definitely overlap, and some of the genetics overlaps. See, the problem is these labels are not precise. They are not like a diagnosis of tuberculosis. And people make the mistake of treating these labels as precise, like a tuberculosis diagnosis or maybe a Lyme disease diagnosis or a West Nile virus diagnosis. You know, they are behavioral profiles.
Do you think we will learn in the same way that we're starting to understand that cancer is, dozens of diseases, that autism might in fact be dozens of different brain conditions?
Well, I think the core criterion is the social awkwardness. And to make social communication disorder separate from autism, I think, is absolutely ridiculous. Then you've got all of these sensory problems that are so variable. And the thing is, these sensory problems occur in other labels as well. And then some of the more severe kids, there's problems with motor. The movement in the motor system is not working right. You can have problems with language. I had problems with getting my speech out. It was like a big stutter. And the brain scan that's shown in the autistic brain book shows how my language speak what I see circuit doesn't have as much bandwidth. But then another kind of language problem is the Akalewit kid that can yak out movie scripts, but he doesn't know what they mean. So you see there's two different language circuits that are affected there. You see, I think in the future, to be able to just, you know, cut this up into component parts and then leave the core criteria, which is the face recognition circuits and the circuits for, reading facial emotion and things like that are not hooked up. That's actually the core criteria.
Let's go back to the phones now. This time we have, Julie on the line in Dallas. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Chris. Thanks so much for taking my call. I have a question for Temple regarding, I have a almost 24-year-old stepson, and he was diagnosed early on with ADD, ADHD. And I suspect that he really has a form of autism. I think he has a form of Asperger's. And I was curious what Temple's experience is with Asperger's and what the differences might be between ADHD and Asperger's and how I can best communicate with him, interact with him.
Well, first of all, ADHD and Asperger's are mixed up all the time. Asperger's is just mild autism with no speech delay. It's part of the same continuum. It's not a separate diagnosis. Now, the first thing I want to find out, this son, is what is he good at? Because he's 24 years old, I want to get him working. So what is he good at? I have to ask some questions before I can advise you.
He is not necessarily good at anything. He loves movies and he loves video games. He knows the first, moment a new trailer comes out for a movie. He has a 1.5-year-old daughter. He can't seem to reconcile, his needs versus her needs. If he's eaten, he doesn't think about the fact that she needs to.
Well, I think one thing maybe, how about being an usher at a movie theater? And this is something where you may need to just talk to the manager at the local movie theater and set it up. A lot of these guys, you're going to have to, grease the skids for them and set it up and explain to the movie theater the situation. Also, he needs a boss that's going to be pretty blunt about telling him when he does something wrong. There's a scene in the HBO movie where my boss slams the deodorant down and says, "You stink, use it." That actually happened. And his secretaries took me out and had me get new clothes. And I was very upset and angry at the time, but you know what? I thank that boss right now. He just saved my career. Likes movies, work in a movie theater. You'll have to just set it up with a theater.
I wanted to ask you that, Temple, about the experience of seeing your life portrayed on screen. Did that feel like someone else, or were there times when the movie sort of reminded you of moments in your own life?
Well, Claire Danes became me in the 60s and the 70s. And I can remember when I watched the most private showing at the movie at the HBO offices. And it was sort of like going in the 60s and 70s time machine. Hmm. The movie showed all my visual thinking accurately. And I really liked the fact it showed all my work stuff accurately. All the things that I built that were shown in that movie were accurate. And it makes me happy when I've had kids write into me and say, "Well, I'm motivated to work hard in school because I know I can succeed." Hmm. That makes me happy.
Temple Grandin is professor of animal science at Colorado State University and author of the new book, The Autistic Brain, Thinking Across the Spectrum. She'll be in town tomorrow night to speak at the Dallas Museum of Arts, Arts and Letters Live. It takes place at the First Presbyterian Church of Dallas. Temple, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for making time for us.
It's been wonderful to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Thanks to all of you for listening today. We appreciate your contributions to the show as listeners, as people who call in and write in. And frankly, we really appreciate your participation as a supporting member of KERA. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go online to kera.org. We are as frank as possible with you about the way that we fund things here at the station. And the truth is, more than half of the money it takes to provide this programming to you comes from people just like you and me who think public radio is important and worth supporting. Jeff Whittington is joining us now once again in studio. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. Wow, what a fantastic conversation. I mean, we tried to get Dr. Grandin in studio a couple of months ago, and she was here to speak in Fort Worth. We're really excited that we were able to bring this conversation to you today. She was talking to us from St. Paul, but she's here tomorrow. And we often pay attention when, folks like this come through because we know how much you value hearing from these kinds of thinkers, these kinds of visionaries out there in our country and in our world. And we're thrilled to be able to bring you these conversations. You know, we could, I guess we could call Temple Grandin and talk to her and think, oh, that was so fantastic. But instead, we put it on the radio so that you can enjoy it, so that you can respond, so that you can engage with people like her. And, you know, it serves so many people just because it's on KERA. When you make a contribution this afternoon, you're helping make this possible. You're making this possible for everyone. You're making it possible for people who have children on the spectrum to understand, to get a different perspective, maybe to have hope, because we were able to broadcast this conversation. So it only happens when you make a call to 888-694-6931. It's only possible with your help, with your financial help, with a donation of dollars, however many dollars you want to give, but a donation at kera.org.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go online to kera.org. We have, as one of our thank you gifts today, copies of Temple Grandin's new book, The Autistic Brain. It's available with a gift at or above the level of $10 a month. You can choose to receive this as your thank you, or you can choose any other thank you gift that you see online. They're all listed there. So if there's something else you want, please do let us know. But make a contribution now at 1-888-694-6931 or kera.org. And know that you are actually taking action in support of something you think belongs in North Texas. There's the whole idea, you know, be the change you want to see. And taking action for public radio is like leaps and bounds more than just being a listener to public radio. We're so happy you're listening. And we wouldn't tell you to turn off the radio or any of that. But if you really believe in the power of public radio, you have to support it.
That's what I think is so great about public radio, is that even if you refuse to give, and I've had people actually say to me, Chris, you know what, I'm not going to ever give, but I listen. And I said, well, thanks for listening, you know, because at least you're participating. But we hope that
we hope that you will
give, because really, honestly, it takes everybody's participation to make society a success, right? Everybody's kind of got to look out for each other a little bit, or else we have utter chaos.
And we know you have a lot of things competing for your time and attention and your money. I got four kids at home, all of whom hope to go to college. But the thing is, this is a service that you already use. This is a not-for-profit coming to you saying, we serve you 365 days a year. Is there any chance that you might make a one-time gift or make a small monthly gift? We believe that it's not too much to ask that if you want the service to be there for you, that you help to provide the money the service requires to provide radio for you. KERA.org is the place to make your contribution, or 1-888-694-6931.
And don't forget, we've got copies of The Autistic Brain, Thinking Across the Spectrum by Dr. Temple Grandin, available when you join the station today with a $120 contribution or a $10 a month contribution as a sustaining member. It's very easy to set up, and that $10 a month just comes off your credit card or comes out of your bank account, however you want to set it up. You can manage it very easily online or through our audience services department. It's very easy to do. And, you know, you can set it up so that it's as affordable as you want it to be. Just go to KERA.org, check it out, or call 888-694-6931. Perhaps in the waning days, hopefully hours, of this membership campaign, because we haven't even mentioned the challenge we've got, but perhaps you would consider joining at the Friends level. It's a $1,500 contribution. It'll get us that much closer to wrapping up this membership campaign. We are looking for about 1,480-some-odd contributions today by tomorrow, 1,483 contributions to finish the drive successfully. And Chris, when that happens, the Harold Simmons Foundation has offered to give KERA an extra $25,000.
1-888-694-6931 is the number. KERA.org is the website. $25,000 is a big deal around here.
And it's at risk. If we don't finish the drive tomorrow,
we don't get it.
No $25,000 for KERA.
Yeah, so think about it. If you're $5 or $10 or $15 a month, can help KERA get an additional $25,000? That's really extraordinary.
Yeah, your contribution essentially could be, because it takes everybody's contribution, right? So your contribution is what helps secure
the $25,000.
I mean, it's like you're doing $25,120. And we're thanking you with a copy of Temple Grandin's book.
And specifically, we're thanking Susan Croft in Dallas and Charlene McGilvray in Fort Worth. Also, Cameron McGriff in Dallas. Really appreciate your participation. We would love to read your name as well, if you give us permission to do that. But we do ask that you make your contribution now at KERA.org or 1-888-694-6931. If you want, pick up a thank you gift copy of Temple Grandin's new book, The Autistic Brain.